From a village known for its restaurants, its easy parking, its beautiful view of Fisherman's Bay, we're on Lopez Island today with KLOI Radio from the Community Center. Our show, Local Color, at the Lopez Center for the Community and the Arts. Mike Greensill at the Steinway. My name is Ed Johnson, volunteers at the Biospherical Digital Optical Aquaphone, underwritten in part by the good people of Lopez Island and KLOI Radio, and it's a benefit for the radio station and your community arts center. So thank you all for being here to help support your arts organizations. On the broadcast today, Stanley Greensall and Kip Greensall. Author of Kindred Spirits, Laurie Harrison. Author of Hands at Work, Iris Grable. From Kestrel Tools, a man who works with his hands, Greg Blumber. West Coast, an international visionary cellist, Bonfire Madigan Shive. Saanich Samish Elder, Victor Underwood. And from Bainbridge Island to the south, author of Westvere, Jonathan Evison, with the wandering Mike Greensill at the keyboard. We're going to go out to Fisherman's Bay. We've very carefully negotiated the channel. We've come in keeping number four just in the proper location as we've come in and come around the channel in, and that's where we've established our biospherical digital optical aquaphones that allows the sound of Fisherman's Bay to be heard around the world on West Coast Live, and we've invited volunteers to work this device. Mitchell Holman, they're in about 55 degree water. I hope the digital line is working.
It's working fine, Seth.
Great, excellent. Thank you. And hello, sir. You are?
I'm John Beer.
From?
From Lopez Island.
And are you a native of the island?
No, I've just been here about 11 years.
11 years. And before that?
Eugene, Oregon.
Thanks for coming north and being with us tonight. And you are?
Rachel.
From?
Oregon.
And what brings you to the show today?
Just on vacation?
Yeah, good, good. And do you like being on Lopez Island?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. What do you do?
Go to the beach, camp.
Well, do you pick blackberries?
No.
Okay, well, do you drink coffee?
Yeah.
I can tell. Hello, you are?
Nancy.
From?
Lopez Island.
And are you a native?
No.
When did you come here?
93 from San Francisco.
Oh, well, welcome.
Yes.
How did you choose Lopez Island? Of all the islands in the world, Oahu, the Philippines, England, I mean, you're in Lopez.
To get married.
Ah. It was love.
Yes.
And it's working out okay?
Uh-huh.
Well, congratulations. Thank you very much. And you are?
Linda.
From?
Lopez.
And a native?
No. Full-time, 3 years, 5 years.
And how did you find this island in the sea?
Craigslist.
Was that in personals, misconnections, or for sale?
It was my first time going on Craigslist, and the seller of the house first time. And so we went on exactly at the same time, and I never went on again. But
Internet kismet.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much for being here and getting one on behalf. And you are?
Mary.
From?
Lopez Island.
And were you born here?
No.
Where were you born?
San Francisco.
Oh, wow! San Francisco native and a resident of Lopez Island. Do you know how rare that is? And how'd you find this island?
One of my singing buddies had land here for a long time, and when it was time to escape from the city, I came here.
And do you feel you've escaped? Have your priorities changed?
From then, yes.
Well, good. We'll follow up later on. Thank you very much. A big hand for our volunteers at the Biospherical Digital Optical Aquaphone. Each one of them is going to receive a KLOI T-shirt and a compact fluorescent light bulb to reduce the carbon footprint, courtesy of Larry and Cassie Gay. And thank you very much for getting wet and being limoed by a bicycle back up here to the theater. Which looks out onto a very bucolic scene. Mike, you enjoying being here? This is your first time here?
Absolutely. If it's the first time here, it came on the old float plane, which was quite exciting.
Yeah, the de Havilland Beaver flew in.
Yes, flew on in.
Yeah, and you came in. So here you are. You're in this beautiful island community.
I knew I was somewhere different from San Francisco when I was in the market yesterday, and the woman behind me had all these packages. It looked like beautiful halibut fillets, and I was just striking up a conversation. I said, halibut for dinner. She said, no, this is crab bait. and I looked on the label. Sure enough, it said crab bait on the label. So I knew I wasn't at home anymore.
There are many other signs. For instance, Ron, our director here, was climbing off the float plane the other day, and his camera fell out of his pocket. Yep. Sploosh. Yep. Right into the water. We got a diver, and he got recovered today.
This is a high-class radio show, I
mean,
tell you
really.
That.
I mean,
we got divers, we got it all.
Yeah. Radio show has to travel with all sorts of people and expectations. Anyway, it's lovely to be here. We're on the radio station KLOY here, and delighted to be here. And it's a great personal pleasure for me because I used to spend boyhood summers here on the island and came to know it. It's changed considerably. Your grocery store has moved. But it's nice that you still have groceries on the island. I think that's very good. And in the small world area, my son Henry just got back from 6 months on an AFS program in Italy, where he ran into your fellow Arlen, who was also there at the same time. And I said, you know, we're doing a show on Lopez Island. He said, I have a friend who lives in Lopez. I met him in Treviso.
And you can tell it's a small place because we were dining last night and our waitress was the mother of this young man.
Well, there you go. So there we are. It's lovely to be here. And there are some old friends from the Bay Area I know here, Mark and Jeannie. Great to see you here. On with the show. Ladies and gentlemen, Stanley Greenthal was on our broadcast, I don't know, was it 23, 4 years ago?
I'm guessing 1992.
1992. Yeah. Well, that's a good guess. That's a while ago. And he lives here on the island with his wife, Kip, who's also a writer. Please welcome Stanley Greenthal of Lopez Island.
Thank you.
For our broadcast here on the show.
Well, we'll do a song that I wrote taking that ferry from Anacortes to Lopez. And these words came to me while on that vessel approaching Lopez. It's called The Waves. The waves that carry us, the waves that carry us in time. In time will pass over us. The touch of your hand, the touch of your hand, the touch of your hand. A receding shore, our hearts full, our hearts full. Let the waves, let the waves carry us away. Our hearts full, let the waves carry us away. In the play of light upon water, in the play of light
waves that carry us, the waves that carry us in time.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Stanley Greenfall, here at Lopez Island. Kip Greenfall. Greenfall. Lovely. Thank you. Thank you. So, as a living here on Lopez Island, what is the biggest distraction for you here?
Biggest distraction? I have to say the beauty of the place. It's a distraction, but it's the inspiration as well. I mean, it's been my home in terms of the spiritual aspects for many, many years since I've come here. So I guess you could be pulled off course by that. But
you ever play out of doors just on your own?
I do, yeah. Not in the rain, of course.
Don't you have a special rain guitar?
Well, I could have a rain suit. You know.
Rain suit. Stanley Greenthal, he'll be back later on West Coast Live with Dwight Kipp. Big CD release concert September 9th in Fort Townsend. So for those of you listening in Florida or elsewhere, the San Juan Islands is an archipelago northwest of Seattle. And the big islands are San Juan, Orcas, Shaw, and Lopez. There are others, Waldron nearby, Johns, Pitcairn. No, that's somewhere else. And many people have made their homes here for years, and each island has got its own particular characteristics. Lopez Island has been known for cattle, sheep, orchards. It used to be a source of Seattle's produce. They have a great farmer's market here on Saturday mornings, just about this hour, I think. And it's also become a great home to creative people who want time to paint, to write, compose music. Just the sort of place you're looking for, Mike.
It is exactly, yes. I'm going to go back and look at Craigslist as soon as the show's over.
But, you know, you have to deal with the ferry system sometimes, which is a beautiful way to get here. Mm-hmm. And you start off in Anacortes, and the line may be very short, or it may be 3 days long, depending on the season and the weekend, and get off at one of these islands. So it was Orcas Island. Was that used in Five Easy Pieces,
yes.
Jack Nicholson's film?
Uh-huh.
Played a pianist and an oil worker. You mm-hmm. may, if you ever saw that.
Yes, I did see that movie.
But there was an Orcas Island setting in that.
And I found it's an interesting climate here. It has like half the rain of Seattle, even though, how far away is it? 60 miles or something?
Yes. Can't you hear the
moment? Oh, I see. You know, there's been a lot of that.
That's the sound of the espresso machines. They have several espresso outlets here today because it's so rainy and cold and they just want to perk themselves up however they can.
There seems to be a lot of secrets here because my host where I'm staying this morning, I said we'd like to go for a walk and pointed at the map. He said, oh, no, you should go to this place. It's not on this map. We don't put it there. But this is the... So I feel there's a lot of that going on.
A lot of local knowledge.
Yes.
Right. A lot of local knowledge. And but there's a banana belt And so there are banana trees that grow here, ginger plants, as you can see, and various tropical produce, but it's in the rain shadow of the Olympic Peninsula and Vancouver Island. And here, but sometimes, drought, if they've got drought, they don't have any water here. Right. People are leaving in droves right now. All kinds of different issues. You know, but it's island life, and your time is set by your community, by your friends, by how you get to another island, when you get on, when you get off. They have this interesting connection called, it sort of antedates the internet, it's called Semaphore, which allows them to communicate with the rest of the web. There's an app for, in fact, there's a Lopez Island app, which we've all put on our little phones, and it's created by somebody who lives here on the island, Sean Lamont, and I don't know, have you seen it? Oh, it's fantastic. Oh, one of the greatest things about it is the ferry schedule. You know how fun it is to read the ferry schedule? Oh, wait a minute. It leaves here at 1 o'clock, and it gets there at 12:45. No, wait, I have to read it backwards. Anyway, you just sort of wheel in one side, departure Lopez, and then destination, and it comes up with all the specific times. Yes. It's brilliant. Plus a little map, and it shows all your villages and businesses. Is his father apparently was the music counselor at the Henderson camps when I was there as a boy, Tim Lamont. So it's a lovely community. It's great to be here, and I'm so thrilled that KLOI is here, the great community radio station, which gets, I don't know how far out into the islands here. It's streamed on the internet too.
We did drive by today, and it's a very cute red trailer.
Anyway, as you can tell, it's a close-knit community here. And there are some people who live here in the good weather and some people who live here year-round. But your definition of good weather might be different. As my sons know from going to camp, there's no such thing as bad weather, just inappropriate clothing. My next guests on West Coast Live have produced a book called Kindred Spirits, Stories and Passions and Portraits from the Heart of Community. Please welcome Laurie Harrison and photographer Greg Ewart to West Coast Live. How'd you do? Kindred spirits, Laurie, does that mean that everyone is exactly alike? I mean, what makes kindred kindred?
They're exactly alike. Yeah, you had it right. Take a right look at it. No, it actually came from Anne of Green Gables. You know, kindred in the heart.
Kindred in the heart. So what is it about the heart of the community that you wanted to set out to find? Your book is a collection of essays about individuals, their life, how their life paths change, with beautiful photographs that Greg Ewart, you've taken over the years. What was the spirit that you wanted to capture? Or did you know what it was when you began the project?
We just know the question when we began, Sej. And the question was, were people willing to go below the surface and ask those kind of unanswerable questions that we believed everybody kind of holds in their heart? You know, the questions, why are we here? What's life for? What happens when we die? Greg had been wondering about this for something like 20 or 30 years, and when we met, he said, you know, I've wanted to do a book like this, but the big question is, would people respond to that kind of question? And would they want to go there? Or would it scare them too much?
So you have, what, 40 people or so in the book here?
That would be 32.
That would be 32, about.
The youngest was 7 and the eldest was 89.
And did anyone turn you down?
Yes.
And what were the reasons?
They were afraid, yeah. But this was a really interesting aspect of it. Greg and I asked people in advance, can we interview you? We thought it was going to be a book. We weren't sure. And most everybody said yes. But a few people said no. It wasn't their cup of tea. But what was most interesting to us was to find out when we interviewed people if they'd be willing to have those interviews in the book later on. And everybody said yes.
Greg, as a photographer, would you ask questions or were you kind of behind the camera observing?
I ask questions as well. We ask questions together. And so what happened was we'd spend 3 or 4 hours probably, and I'd bring the camera in about halfway through, and then I'd start photographing. But we really got down to the questions and followed the conversation. I had to get back to one other thing you said. On Lopez, we've been referred to as wood muffins.
Wood muffins?
Yes. So, you know.
Have you heard this phrase, wood muffins? Yeah. Some yes, some no.
So whatever that means. But anyway, back to the... So it was interesting. We'd spend the time, and then we'd come back later, three, four weeks later, and come back and, you know, do another session. But we did. What was interesting to me was that when you start asking questions of people and who they are and what they are, they talk, and they keep talking. And, you know, it's a conversation that goes on and on. And I don't think we give any of us time to tell our story, to really say our story. I mean, we probably could ask questions of you, and you'd probably talk, and no one else would get on the show, right?
You might be surprised. But along the way, in creating this conversation, it must have also answered questions for yourselves and raised new questions for yourselves about your own life.
It sure did. It sure did. And some of those questions weren't answered for me till 10 or 15 years later, you know. I mean, I didn't realize that at the time that we were doing these interviews that the questions were so important to me that I couldn't answer them myself. And so in the end, I really realized I was asking these questions of other people because I couldn't answer them for myself.
Do you think the way of the Heisenberg principle, you know, that by asking the question, you changed their lives in some way? You affected how they thought about it.
You know, that's absolutely true. What people told us again and again was that they were being given this opportunity to slow down and think deeply about these questions. And these are the questions that we don't ask each other at the post office or the grocery store. But they're the questions that when they're asked, we really do want to answer them. And especially what we found was that the folks that had the most trauma in their lives were the ones who wanted those questions asked the most. There was a gal on this island whose daughter had just committed suicide. And Greg had the courage to ask her these very difficult questions. I was too shy in those interviews. And what she told us later was she was so grateful that somebody would slow down and ask her those questions because they were the ones that held the most meaning in her life. But most of us are just afraid to ask those questions on a daily basis.
Yeah. I mean, when you talk about that, you say in your introduction, visitors delighted by our connectedness are often startled by the simplicity of our choices. We have no mall or movie theater. There's no daily newspaper delivery, though you can get a paper if you drive to the ferry landing after 7 a.m. We have a medical clinic, but no hospital. Hitchhiking is still normal transportation for local teenagers. The pharmacy and gas station close on Sundays. Nothing stays open 24 hours except the doors of the churches. There are no stoplights. We don't have an actual town, but call a little cluster of stores and restaurants in the center of the island the village. Our three deputies go by their first names. Many people choose not to own a television. The ferries which deliver everything from milk to mail occasionally break down or canceled by rough seas. A few winters ago, we went 3 days with no service at all. But then, along with all the lovely amenities of the island, you also say we have young teens becoming mothers and fathers, accessible drugs, family violence, lonely elderly, suicide, bored teenagers, severe shortage of well-paying jobs, and a shrinking supply of affordable housing. So that's quite a balance, where people want to come and live the island life, and so there must be other answers, other ways of life that people are looking for when you're here. I mean, is that why you came, Greg?
I came because I was at school and came up and found this beautiful place to live, and it was simple, and I did not want a complex life. I think a lot of characters come to the West Coast and get as far as they can go, and this you can't get further west than this, you know, so we got a lot of characters on this island, you know.
Well, you can get to San Juan Island. That's a little further away.
Just barely. We haven't checked the West Coast of San Juan yet.
How have you found the community for yourself, Greg?
Oh, the community here is incredible, incredibly supportive. When anybody's in trouble or needs help, we gather around and support each other, and it's unbelievable amount of support and love in this community. And it does make any difference what your politics are, your, you know, where you come from or whatever. You know, people gather and support.
We were in Etna for last week's show, which is in Northern California, a small town, 800 people. And one of the things that could happen in that town is that somebody will call the postmistress and say, hi, so-and-so needs their medicine. Is there anybody waiting in line there who could deliver it for them? I imagine you have similar events.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you lived here, I could post a letter to you at Sedge, Lopez Island, and it would get to you. I mean, no question about it.
Yeah. And who delivers it? It's the post office?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Or do you have post office boxes?
Both. We have both, yeah.
And so if there's something you would change about the island...
Okay, everybody.
Off the grid, on the grid, more housing, less housing, more water hookups, fewer water hookups.
Greg, do you have a fast answer? I can't think of one thing I'd change about this island. You know,
what is doing the dump?
Oh.
We have a take it or leave it, so you can go and drop something off, or you can take something. And so that's doing the dump. You can get clothes, you can get tools, you can get... Well, how many people have been to the dump?
The entire house here.
How many people are wearing something from the dump?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And is the dump in a place, or is it a state of mind, a practice?
State of mind.
That's the existential question.
And this book, you describe the passions. What has been sort of the underlying passion of this community?
It's the word community. It's the way people here, and in other communities around the nation, though they support each other. They're there for each other. We know each other. We look into each other's eyes. This is a place where you're known, and that's good news and bad news, of course. It kind of harkens back to 100 years ago, or to places around the world that are less developed now, where people stay really connected at the heart. Yeah.
E.B. White wrote about New York in his essay here in New York. Here's New York. That he said people go to New York to be alone, mm-hmm. And it seems to me people don't come to Lopez to be alone. Even though you might think that the island life is isolated.
It's not isolated, and there's plenty to do, but you certainly don't come here to be alone. You come here to be known, in a way, I think, you know, because everybody's going to know you in the end.
Greg Ewart, photographer, and Laurie Harrison, writer of Kindred Spirits. Thank you very much for being on West Coast Live.
Thank you so much.
Talking to us about your island. You know, Mike, I mean, we've been to a number of small towns, you know, for our shows. Skagway, Haines, Alaska. Heather Lundy wrote the book, If you lived here, you'd be home by now.
Yes.
You know, here on Lopez. Lopez, it's Lopez, not so much Lopez, right? Lopez, right?
Now, maybe I love the term for the people, Lopezians. Isn't that
Lopezians?
Fun? Lopezians.
Which planet are they from? Mike Greensill is a man who uses his hands at work, and there's a collection of stories here by Iris Gouvelle called Hands at Work, Portraits and Profiles of People Who Work with Their Hands. Magnificent photographs. Please welcome one of your local writers here to West Coast Live, Iris Gouvelle. Thank you.
honor.
Thank you very much. Iris is wearing red shoes.
From the dump, but lent to me by a friend.
So how does that differ from the dump? If it's lent by a friend, is it dump-esque, or is there another term for those kind of loans? Because I imagine they exist.
They do exist, and unlike the dump, where you can take it or leave it, I have to give these back.
Oh, I see. The red shoes are quite lovely. I started wearing red shoes when I started doing... Actually, before doing the radio show, I saw a pair of black Doc Martens and a pair of red Doc Martens in a store in San Francisco called Nordstrom, which you may know. And I wanted black shoes, but those red ones looked pretty nice. And I started wearing them on holidays, George Washington's birthday, Valentine's Day, Labor Day. And then I thought, every Saturday when I do the show, it's like a holiday. I'll wear my shoes. People went, that's weird, you know. And then it became this kind of thing over the years. And so here they are. And one day we were doing a show in Skagway at the northern end of the Inside Passage. And I was asking a fellow about the Alaska Gold Rush. And did anyone actually keep any money? Or was it like the .com? I mean, they imported women from Paris. And I mean, this is in the Yukon. This is Dawson City. Right. You know where that is? It's like up near the Arctic Circle. Women from Paris, champagne, expensive. They imported a poet, Robert Service. Now, he worked as a bank clerk there at the time. Anyway, the people, some of them just spent all their money, but I said, anyone hold on to any money? Yes, there was one fellow, for instance, who took his claim from his quarter stake and went back to Seattle, and he opened a shoe store. His name was John Nordstrom. And I thought, yeah, and so it came full circle to my red shoes. But I mean, there were hands at work. I mean, when you had to work a claim, I mean, you were using hands. You must have seen hands in all kinds of conditions.
Well, the inspiration for the book came from a series of photographs by Summer Moon Scriver, who's the photographer in this book. And those pictures of hands were all doing some kind of work, and lots of different kinds of work: digging potatoes, spinning wool, baking bread. And the people in the book, we really did try to get a cross-section of a variety of kinds of work. About half of the people are artisans, and then there are a baker, a midwife, sign language interpreter, automotive technician. So, yes.
Vibraphonist.
Right, that's right, who has been on this show in the past.
And when you look at these pictures and you see people's hands, say for this, I mean, you must have spent a lot of time going around and looking at other people's hands on the island. I mean, you must have been.
I have to confess that until I started working with Summer on this project and saw those photographs, that I hadn't paid a lot of attention to people's hands. I like to hear their stories, and Summer was the one who told me that she had grown up really looking at people's hands, and so she kind of introduced me to a whole new way of getting to know people and experiencing who they are and what they do.
And so so how did it change the way you look at your own hands?
I would say that one of the stories kind of exemplifies or taught me some things about that. Sheila Metcalf, the weaver, it was a really moving moment when we were talking with her and photographing her, and she looked at her own hands, and tears came to her eyes, and she said, when I look at my hands, I see my father. My fingernails are just like his. And everybody before us is in our hands. And I look at my hands now, and I see my grandmother and my mother, and I hadn't really thought of that in that way.
For some people, they react with sentiment. Other people react with horror.
Right, you know? Right.
Oh, my God, my mother!
Well, maybe with other aspects, but not the hands.
Right. So, I mean, here's a lovely quotation from someone who works with food, and I love being alone in the kitchen where I can explore food deeply.
Yes. There were so many things like that that people said as I was listening to them talk about their work that just, it took my breath away. And as I was interviewing people, I took notes by longhand, and I tried to write down word for word everything that people said, and wouldn't know really what I had until after I had gone home and transcribed and thought about things. But there were things that people said like that, that the minute they said it, I just said, oh, that, that says it. And there were so many. And the designer that we worked with, Bob Lanphier, did a superb job of pulling out those quotes so that people would really get the essence of what this kind of work meant for the person. And that is a great example.
There's also a quality of synesthesia. I mean, for instance, sometimes I paint because I'm not seeing. When you paint, you start seeing more light, color, yellows, greens, browns that turn purple. You start to see the whole palette of colors, you know, through your hands by working with color.
Right. I was so moved by that as well, that idea that it's when you're really focused in on your work that you see something different. And it's what opens you up to things that you didn't notice before.
Did you find that people were protective of their hands or careless with them, or it varied from person to person?
I would say they were respectful of their hands because everyone understood just how important their hands were to them. We saw all different kinds of hands, and it was surprising to me some of the hands that I expected would really show the wear and tear of their work, such as the reef net fisherman. He has some of the most beautiful hands, and he has all 10 fingers still after 50 years of fishing. And then other people who had an elegance about them, and their hands were really pretty rough and tough.
I liked reading about this typesetter. I have a lifetime collection of type. Each piece is a precise sculpture made of lead. You have to handle them carefully. They're heavy, but they can be hurt. Mm-hmm. And some typesetters who would work with type and put it in also could set by ear. They'd recognize the notes of separate letters.
Oh, right, yeah. Right.
And there was this eye-ear-hand coordination, yes, that would be developed over the years.
Yeah. And this woman is so experienced. I don't recall her saying something like that, but I wouldn't be surprised if she has that kind of sense about it as well. And she's a great example, too, of just the way people talked about the materials that they work with and the tools that they work with. They're like members of their family in some cases.
How would you and your photographer find someone to be a subject about hands?
Well, we're blessed here in this community to have so many people who are doing various kinds of work with their hands. And this is a self-published book, which means very low budget. And so we didn't...
It doesn't look that way.
Thank you.
It looks quite pricey, in fact. $34, Heron Moon Press, handsworking.com.
Right, thank you. Yes. Well, it was low budget in that we weren't, as much as we would have liked, we weren't able to travel around the world and visit people all over doing various kinds of work with their hands. But we could probably do two or three more volumes just with the people here. But we had an idea of some of the kinds of work that we wanted to include in this book and people that we knew who were doing those kinds of work. So it was not difficult at all to find a wide range of types of work.
Well, then there's the interpreter. An interpreter blends in. I know I'm doing my job if the hearing students don't notice I'm there. Right. There's somebody taking sound and moving their hands in connection with it.
That's right. And any of you who have, I'm sure many of you have seen a sign language interpreter at a performance of some kind, and they are so visible to the audience, and yet, as she said, if they're doing their job well, other people really don't see them as the main attraction. They're doing their job of communicating to the people who aren't able to hear. And so it's an interesting contrast of being so visible and up front and yet blending in.
Mike, are you conscious of your hands? Do you take care of them in any way?
Well, I actually, when you were doing your introduction to this interview, I almost thought the first question was going to be about hand cream and about how they were kept. I do. I mean, I keep my hands soft, uh-huh. And so I'm very conscious of them. Yeah.
when we would go to visit with people, I was a little concerned about how much we were asking of them for us to come into their workspaces and spend time with them and ask these questions. And all we could really offer them was they'd get a book someday. But we also gave them a little jar of hand cream.
Oh, good. So you're the second person here.
Well, sadly, it's called Working Hands Cream, I believe, but sadly, it's no longer being made here on Lopez. But
So you're the second person who has figured out a way that you can go be nosy is by saying we might do a book one day.
That's right. And people were, if anything, they were really humble and said, "Well, why would you want to talk to me? What's so special about me?" And as Laurie described so well, we found the same thing, that people do really want to be heard. And just as we don't talk about those deep questions about what's the meaning of life and what about dying, we don't talk about our work either. I mean, how often do you have someone ask you about your work and you get out more than a couple of sentences and you're on to something else? And we
or the person's eyes begin to glaze over, you know. Oh, sorry, I asked that question. Right. So what do you do when you're not writing here on the island?
Well, I like many people on the island, I juggle lots of different things. My first career was in nursing, and I still have my nursing license, and I now I'm working part-time as a school nurse on Orcas Island, so I go over to Orcas a couple times a week during the school year. And I also make hand-bound journals. I do my own work with my hands, which is one of the reasons I think was so drawn to these images of other people's work with their hands. And in a few weeks, I'm starting an MFA in creative writing program.
Wonderful. Terrific. We look forward to more from you. Iris Gravel, thank you very much for being on West Coast Live. The book called Hands at Work. Winner of various awards. Mike Greensill.
Thank you.
Mike Greensill is from a small town, aren't you?
I am.
Was it a small town? Is it a small town?
Well, you mean now or where I was
when,
brought
when
up?
You were born, when you were born.
Yes, I was brought up in a little village in England. And
choir boy?
Yes, in fact, I mean, the countryside reminds me very much of home and the sort of doings and the goings-on and the chicken coops. And things.
Goats wandering around, chickens in the street.
Yeah, it's very nice indeed.
But it was a small town. Everybody knew everybody?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Did anyone look after you, report on you?
Mainly reporting.
Yeah. How would that happen?
Well, one would be seen after hours, so to speak, and it might be reported to one's parents.
No.
Creep out. I used to go to bed and then creep out of the window and meet my mates.
Oh.
It's no, I won't go there.
Our friend Rachel Pfefferman, who lived on Port Townsend for many years, did a book of drawings dedicated to her grandmother and her grandmother's hands, all sewing. Quite a lovely book that she put together. Fascinated and devoted to the idea of hands and how they could create things.
Wow.
My next guest on West Coast Live works with his hands, and he makes tools. Kestrel Tool is the name of his company. He's been on Lopez since 1968. Please welcome Greg Blumberg to West Coast Live.
How do you do?
So a kestrel is a raptor. They've got sharp claws. You must have sharp tools.
That was why that name was chosen, because the kestrel is a sharp little bird.
Yeah. What kind of tools do you make?
These are tools that are used by wood sculptors that carve in the tradition of the Native Americans of the Northwest Coast in Alaska.
So this is not only esoteric in a way, but it's also very beautiful and traditional. I mean, there's a lot of homage to earlier tool makers you have to practice.
I make handmade tools, and they are, I think they are beautiful.
What would be an example, like an adze, for instance?
An adze. I make several different adze for different jobs.
And these are not advertisements, in case somebody is confused.
Really, it isn't an advertisement. I'm pretty much...
No, these are ads. Could you describe in ads what an ads looks like?
What it looks like? Oh, it looks like a hoe, I guess, or something. A hammer. It's got the blade is transverse to the handle. And unlike a hatchet, they're transverse. So the beauty of it is they're very controllable tools if they're made with the correct geometry.
And so what are the materials you use to make them?
Wooden handles. Their blades are of high carbon tool steel, and they're tied to the handle with seine twine, fisherman nylon seine twine.
And when you get an order for a tool, are they made to order? Does somebody say, I'd like one that, you know, is in such and such a dimension or weighs so much? Do you decorate them?
I do. I do custom work because it interests me. But basically, I have a line of tools, and people can order them. And I don't make them ahead because I think I'm always afraid that I'm going to die, and then I'll have these tools that I didn't sell and didn't get the money for. So
you're sort of a follower of that Japanese idea of the just-in-time kind of production line.
Yeah. It's just as the orders come in, I deal with them.
How many tools do you make a year?
Too many. Lots.
So how long does it take to make an ads? I mean, is it an afternoon's work? Is it 3 days?
You know, the problem is that it's the thing is that it is components. So you have components, and when I have all the components together, it doesn't take long to put one together. And so if I've got the handle blanks and the irons, and they're all ground and forged and heat treated and all that, I can slap them together pretty fast. But
and then the tools are used to make canoes, totems, what else? Longhouses?
All of that, yeah. Masts and bowls and stuff, primarily, probably. So
can you identify a bowl that has had your ads in it?
Maybe.
I was going to say, sure, yeah. It looks really good, you know. And so how do people hear from you? Are they pretty much exclusively Native people, or do they include North American artists such as Bill Holm?
Well, I think it runs the gamut. I sent off $1,000 worth of tools to the Quileute tribe today. I send a lot of tools out to Native American groups. There's some people up in the Aleutians that are just ordering a bunch of tools for a culture camp out on Adak Island. I mean, that's out there.
Do you realize the problems you're causing for archaeologists about 4,000 years from now? They'll be going, this is interesting, this material culture. We've got the same tool on Lopez Island as we do up in the Aleutians. What kind of trade routes do you think there were? I mean,
well, we've got our trade routes, that's for sure. Yeah.
So you've been on the island here. One of your children is named for part of a tree, cedar bough.
Yes.
Yeah. And Zach, that's not a tree, is it?
Nope, not a tree.
Is Zach jealous of Cedar Bough's name?
I don't think so. No, I don't think so.
So it says, I understand you've milked a cow for 7 years. Was it the same cow?
Actually, I had two different cows, yeah.
And did they know that their...
Did they know
that their udders were in the hands of a master toolmaker who's...
At that time, I wasn't making tools. Yeah. I've been on Lopez a long time. And I've been making the tools a long time, but not as long as I've been on Lopez, that's for sure.
You worked for Camp Norwester. You helped build things there. You've got your business going. And you seem happy on this island with this way of life. You've made very clear choices.
I love Lopez Island. It really means the world to me. These people, this community, the children here, this is everything for me.
Greg Blumberg, who has also a degree in gunsmithing and has made technical mountain climbing gear. I mean, you're kind of... I mean, you can do... You're like a survivalist, it seems.
Well, I do a lot of different things. It'd be great to have about 4 or 5 more lifetimes, you know. There's lots to do, and it's all exciting. There's lots of interesting things.
So do you find that the pace of your work changes between the seasons? Like summer, you're choosing to, say, go out on the water or go fishing, but in the winter you're hunkered down and making the tools, or is it, I mean, how do you arrange the daily balance of your life through the years?
You know, at this point, I consider myself at least semi-retired, and I don't take rush orders. I let all my help go. I just do it as it comes to me and as I'm able to do it, and so that I just try and make a flow. There's lots to do. We have a big garden and orchard and everything, and that absorbs a lot of time this time of year.
Do you make your own garden tools?
Not so much, yeah. But I, you know, weld up gates and do all kinds of stuff like that and try and make them artistic. And so,
Greg Blumberg, thank you very much. Kestrel Tools, for being on West Coast Live.
Thank you.
I love you.
Hands. There we are.
Yeah.
Hands. Adzes.
What's the plural of ads?
Adzes? Adzi? No, I don't know. Adzes. Why not?
It's difficult to pronounce. I mean, it might be just an apostrophe S, but it's difficult to pronounce. Adzes.
Perhaps, but not for Lopezians.
Lopezians.
Lopezians. Lopezians. She couldn't get on the first ferry, but she got on the next one, and she got here in time. Will you please welcome Bonfire Madigan Shive to West Coast Live. Bonfire, the name of her music. Madigan's her name. She's equipped with a cello and a Mac.
Inch, inch, inch away. Inch, 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 inch. Let's inch away. The world's changing the world changed the world. The world's changing the world's changed the world. The world's changing the world's changed the world. Inch, 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 inch away. Inch by inch, let's inch away. Inch, 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 inch. Inch away. I hear a new language in the subtext of the heart. It is not Spanish or English or Sketchit. It's not the cash registers or the internet. Changing the world changed the world. The world's changing the world changed the world. The world's changing, the world changed the world. Inch by inch, 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 inch away. Inch by inch, we'll inch our way in. Inch, 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 gonna inch away.
Madigan Shive here on West Coast Live. And Bonfire is kind of the collective name of your ensemble, whether you're one, two, or four.
Yes, I've been called Bonfire Madigan. It's my plume de nom de plume or whatever.
I like a feather of a name. I like that.
Yes, but I also feel really aligned with someone like Lightning John Hopkins, and how the lightning was how he played and approached his instrument, and I think the bonfire is how I play and approach this instrument. So
you were part of the Seattle Riot Girl scene. What was that?
Yes, well, the Riot Girl scene was really a fabulous uprising of young women within the underground punk and counterculture music scene of the early 90s in Seattle. And I had a great fortune of being in a time and place where people like Kurt Cobain would come see me perform as a teenager. And I started writing music on the cello for voice and cello with all kinds of inspiration and different instrumentation and really the momentum to find your voice. And it was really about making feminism for us. And instead of being in the mosh pit holding the jackets of the guys making the music, we wanted to be on stage writing our music and finding our voice.
Madigan Shive, holding no one's jacket in the mosh pit. So why the cello? I mean, why not electric guitars, electric bass? I mean, what is it about the cello that has a voice that you like?
Well, I really feel like the cello found me. We found each other. I was 9 years old, and it was a Meet the Instruments Day in my fourth grade, and I was always the new girl, and I moved around a lot with my family, all over Western Washington, actually. And I saw this big violin, and I'd never seen anything like that in my life, and they had it tucked behind the piano, and they were kind of corralling the kids into different lines to try the instruments, and I remember a woman pushing me towards the piccolo or something because I was a slight girl. And I, of course, this rubbed me the wrong way, and I started saying, no, no, I want to try the big violin, please, please, the big violin. And finally, I don't think they wanted to get it out, actually. It's a pretty precarious instrument. It was larger than me at the time, but finally, once I put my arms around it, it felt like home. It felt like my best friend, and I really have taken this instrument with me all over the world, through all my schooling, and now, as a professional touring musician and artist, I feel like I found my voice with the cello.
Where do you keep your cello at night?
Well, usually close to the bed where I am, honestly. In its case, if I'm at home, it has its own special stand and place. I would actually love a new stand of wood from here. I've all these talk of people building things with their hands. I'd love to get a new beautiful wooden stand. But near the bed, it stays near the bed where I am.
Could we hear another one of your pieces?
I would love to. I'm going to perform a new song. It's a single off of a forthcoming album, and it's called Lady Saves the Dragon from the Evil Prince.
There's a theme in her life, Madigan Shive. Madigan Shive, Bonfire Madigan. Oh, there goes. The Riot Girl punk scene comes to Lopez. And it's time to do that existential exercise that were similar to the questions that Laurie would ask. You know, it's who are we? And we're West Coast Live. We're at WCL.org. We're here on behalf of KLOI Radio, your Lopez radio station, and the Lopez Community and Arts Center. And the other radio stations carrying West Coast Live will also try to figure out who they are, and they'll identify themselves. We're going to be doing a little juggling here for a minute or so, and then we'll be back here
with other great guests, including Joyce and Victor Underwood, the Saanich Samish elders, Jonathan Evison, author of West of Here, and some of your audience true stories as we continue live from Lopez Island in the state of Washington, the San Juan Islands. It's West Coast Live.